Welcome to the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD, where we talk about anything farm, fresh, and food-related. My name is Sarah Severson. Today we have in the studio with us Brittany Meyer. Brittany is a young farmer who's passionate about rebuilding a regionally adapted local food system. She believes education is a crucial piece of this process. Thus, her career in agriculture has been focused on developing an educational farm program, and most recently, she has developed a local workshop series for seed saving. Welcome to the show, Brittany.
Thank you, Sarah. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's start out. What are you currently doing in Montezuma County in terms of agriculture, food production, and education?
Yeah. The one thing I'm doing is working for Open Sky Wilderness Therapy, and I've developed a garden for them. So they have a 160-acre farm in Mancos, and I currently manage that. And we have a 42-foot geodesic dome greenhouse.
What is that?
It's an incredible, really intelligent design for a greenhouse that allows you to grow year round. So this year, we have what's called a climate battery, and this is kind of an alternative energy, system for a greenhouse. It allows us to use about 90% less energy, for heating and cooling needs. And so we have, the greenhouse has not froze yet this year, and the only, you know, active energy we've used is a couple fans.
Wow. And how does the battery, is it a generator? It sort of throws heat into the dome?
Or that's a great question. It's kind of official name is a subterranean heating and cooling system. So it's a series of perforated pipes 4 feet underneath the ground. And so it pumps hot air from the greenhouse during the day through all this soil beneath the greenhouse and heats that soil up. And then at nighttime in the wintertime when it's cold in the greenhouse, all that mass below your feet is warm. So then those fans are drawing all that, circulating all that air underneath the ground and releasing warm air into the greenhouse. So in the summertime, it cools it. And in the wintertime, it heats it. And it just uses two fans.
Wow, that is fantastic. Yeah. What are you growing in the greenhouse right now in the grow dome?
Yeah, currently I've been harvesting tomatoes. Tomatillos.
What? Tomatillos.
Yeah. Yep. They don't do well as well because the heat doesn't, it's just not quite the same as the summertime. We don't have as long of days, that kind of thing. And so really I've been doing a lot of kale, a lot of chard, bok choy, tatsoi, mustard greens, salad mixes. That kind of stuff is doing really well this time of year.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. Today we have in the studio with us Brittany Meyer, young farmer and educator in Montezuma County. Brittany, let's talk a little bit about seed saving. You said you went to a conference. Tell us a little bit. Let's start with, what is seed saving?
Seed saving is an act that humans have been participating in for anywhere between 15,000 years ago and 8,000 years ago. And it's really how we've developed this agriculture system. It really started with some people down in Mexico taking seeds from what looked like grass plants called teosinte and saving seeds from the biggest kernels and the plants that worked the best for them, and over time developing what we have today is corn. And so when we plant a seed, grows up, matures, produces fruit, produces vegetable, and produces seed so that it can self-replicate and grow a crop again the following year.
Right. So now we have all these companies that I can buy seeds from. Why would I care about saving seed?
That's a really good question. Every year, one of the incredible things about a seed is that it grows up and it takes information from its immediate surroundings, its environment, and puts that back into its DNA so that when it produces a new seed, it has all this new intelligence from its environment that season. And so you can imagine that seeds adapt to places and growing strategies over time. Currently, those seed companies that you're talking about grow in big quantities. So they grow, 500 acres for a seed supplier like Johnny's, or, you know, seed companies that more gardeners are more familiar with. Their seeds are grown on these big, big scales. And so they're more adapted to a different kind of agriculture system than we have here. We have a different climate. We have different needs here. We have different insects. We have different diseases. So those seeds aren't adapted to our particular region.
So how do we get those seeds? Aren't the local, you know, if we go to some of the local garden businesses around town, I can probably buy those seeds locally, yes? Or
you can buy seeds that have been grown from a variety of kind of smaller scale seed companies. Mm-hmm. And kind of the way a seed company works a lot of time is the seed company will actually hire farmers to grow seeds for them. And the most efficient and the cheapest way they can do that is to hire a farmer that has a 500-acre farm, and they can grow multiple pounds of seeds for them. So they have all these contracts. They bring it to a central location, and then they disperse it in little seed packets across the country. And like I was saying earlier, one of the really important things of a seed is that it has intelligence particular to the place that it was grown, in the system that it was grown under. So a lot of these seeds that we're buying at the store today are what's called high input cultivars. And so they are adapted to a lot, to high fertilizer input, high pesticide input. And so they're not necessarily adapted to the same kind of conditions that we have here in Southwest Colorado. We have really unique sunshine. We have really unique monsoons. We have really unique soil types. All of these things that these seeds haven't been adapted to, so they don't have a chance as doing as well as if we had seeds and we started to produce seeds here in our region.
Wow. So, and tell me, you know, I think about how the grocery stores before the 1950s or before grocery stores came in, there used to be a real diversity of produce. And so I'm thinking in terms of seed too, has that changed? The number of types of varieties of seeds available, has that changed over the years?
Absolutely. This is really significant. So we estimate that 100 years ago, we had 7,000 species for food crops. The Center for Biodiversity estimates that we've lost 96% of all of those crops.
Lost them. So we could never grow them again.
Now, this doesn't mean that we can't rebuild that, because seeds wants to increase their genetic diversity. That's naturally what they want to do if we let them and if we work with them in the right ways. But currently, we've lost that 96%.
So we have basically a few hundred varieties versus over
7,000. Much less, yes. And one of the pieces, too, is that's really, really interesting is that, over 50% of all the food consumed in the United States is three crops.
Three different seed varieties.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
So that's crazy. So
yep.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. We're talking with Brittany Meyer, young farmer and educator in Montezuma County. We're talking about seed saving. It's very interesting. This sort of innate, when you're talking about the seed, there's this sort of, I feel like you're talking about a human being or a little being inside there. Can you say a little bit more about that?
The potential of a seed? Yes. So you said it's like this living being, and it really is. We don't think about it, but this little hard, seems like this little hard dot in our hand, right? It's actually this living and breathing embryo. And so it's alive, and it's constantly feeding on what's called the little endoplasm inside the seed. And we have seeds that we date back to 2,000 years ago that have germinated. I have some seeds that were buried for 800 years and germinated. And so really these seeds are just this tiny little dot, what looks like it, but really it has incredible intelligence to grow this plant and everything it needs to grow this plant. And then also to produce seeds so that it can self-replicate with new information so that it's only adapting and getting smarter over time. So really these seeds they're really incredible.
What a world. I'm never going to look at a seed again the same way. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. We're back with more of the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. We've got Brittany Meyer here today with us in the studio, a young farmer and educator in Montezuma County. So, Brittany, let's talk about how to seed save. We've learned a little bit about how incredible these seeds are. How and when do you save seeds? How does that process work?
That's a really good question, and that is that's a big question. So every seed has different needs for how it reproduces. In general, we can kind of break it down into inbreeding plants and outcrossing plants. So you have some plants that have both a male and female flower, or a flower that has both male and female parts. Those plants can self-pollinate and reproduce without getting pollen from any other plants. These plants, it's really easy to save the seeds from those plants, plant them the next year, and you'll have the same plant as you had the year before with a little bit of increased intelligence from its surroundings, like we talked about before. Outcrossing plants are either wind-pollinated or insect-pollinated plants. And these plants will actually exchange pollen with other plants, and if two plants are of the same species are pollinated by an insect, you won't get the same plant the following year. And so outcrossing species, it's really important to isolate these plants so that the same varieties are getting cross-pollinated so that you know that you're going to get the same crop again the following year.
So has GMO seeds that have been introduced into plant varieties or seed varieties, has that influenced any of this seed saving?
Yes, it has. A lot of the GMO plants today are cross-pollinating plants, and a lot of farmers across the nation have experienced genetic drift. And so the pollen from these genetically modified foods getting contaminated with their crops. And this has proven to be a problem for a lot of farmers across the country.
And is that then the responsibility of the person with the GMO crop to keep their pollen in their own field, or...
Unfortunately, this is the responsibility of the farmer, and a lot of people are looking to change this. But in 1970, we passed what's called a Plant Variety Protection Act, and that allows companies to patent seeds. So that company now owns this genetically modified seed. So if they go into a farmer's field and they test their crop and say, oh, wow, this has some of our genetically modified genes in it, you can't have these. You did not buy these seeds from us. And now that farmer is responsible, even though the pollen from a farm 5 miles away could have blown onto their crop and contaminated their entire crop.
Wow. So is there anything addressing that issue? I think of an enormous shower cap over the GMO crop to keep their pollen where it's supposed to stay.
Wouldn't that be nice? You know, there's currently not... There's a lot of people who see this as really not okay, and they're trying to change this. Currently, there's nothing protecting those farmers. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, I think there's a workshop that's coming up that you're teaching.
Great.
Tell us a little bit about that workshop.
Great. So I've partnered with the Mancus Seed Library, which is a really, really great way of kind of sharing seeds within our local community and starting to grow regionally adapted local seeds. And we are going to be hosting a series of workshops at the Grange in Mancus. The first one will be on March 3rd, and it's called A Celebration of Seeds. So we're just going to talk about how incredible seeds are, how they work, how they take all this new information and bring it into their new lives, and the history of seeds. The second one will be called Reproductive Biology and the Intelligence of Seeds. Mm-hmm. So that one we're really going to break down all the different plant families like I was talking before and how to save seeds from plants that cross-pollinate and all that kind of stuff. And then the third, and that'll be on March 10th. March 17th, we're going to be doing, the workshop will be called The Basics of Seed Saving. And that really covers, well, how do you save these seeds? When do you save them? How do you collect them? How do you store them? All of that kind of stuff. And then it's going to culminate in a seed exchange on March 23rd at the Grange as well. And we've got a bunch of donations from local heirloom seed companies and a lot of local farmers as well who've been growing out seeds and have generously donated some of their seeds.
Great. Sounds like an interesting series of workshops to learn from the start to the end about how to seed save.
Yeah.
If you've just tuned in, we're talking with Brittany Meyer, young farmer and educator in Montezuma County. You're listening to the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. Brittany, let's talk a little bit about, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
26.
And how did you get involved in farming? What gave you a passion for farming and local food production?
Yeah. You know, I really grew up in the mountains, in the wilderness, and with this really, really strong love for the natural world. And in high school, in my high school, we actually had a farming program, which was one of my favorite aspects of high school. I learned a ton. And one of the things I really learned was about a lot of different types of agriculture systems. And I really learned that, wow, our agriculture system can either be really harmful to the natural environment, or it can actually work with it and increase genetic diversity and really, really work with nature. And that was really inspiring to me. Wow, we really need to create more of these systems. And so that's kind of really what inspired me.
Mm-hmm. And what's your connection between the importance of education and agriculture?
So that's also another, I think when you know what you're buying, it's when you know a little bit about the agriculture system, it's really going to influence the foods that you buy. It's going to influence the foods that you grow. So I think it's really to start to grow a more ecologically friendly agriculture system, it starts with people understanding different kinds of agriculture systems and how we can actually change this system. And so I've really, really focused on how do people learn? How can we reach people so that we can start to create this new agriculture system that is directed by the people?
How do we learn? How do we create a new system?
A lot of people have a lot of different answers to that question. My belief is that we learn from doing. We learn from experiencing. So just like I told you, I was really inspired on this path from being in high school and actually working on a farm. So rather than just studying it in a classroom, I got this hands-on experience that was applied education. And that really made a difference in how much I took away and how much I really learned.
Fantastic. Well, you're an inspiration, Brittany. I'm glad to have you on the agricultural farming team.
Well, thank you. You too.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
So if people want more information about the seed saving workshop, can you give us a phone number for them to contact?
Absolutely. You can contact me. My phone number is 970-618-1919, and I would be happy to give you more information.
Great. Well, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for hosting.
That was Brittany Meyer, young farmer and educator in Montezuma County. You're listening to the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. Tune in 2 weeks on February 18th at 8:30 a.m. for the next edition. I'm Sarah Severson, your host, signing off, saying friend a farmer this week. Thanks for listening and have a great day.